PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week, once again, is Mr. Adam Rayberg of Bridgestone Golf fame. How are you, Adam?
I'm doing good, Dan. Thank you so much for having me back on again, and appreciate all the THP guys listening to this if you're tuning in, and just ready to talk a little about Bridgestone and a lot about just golf stuff.
Yeah. Or maybe a lot about Bridgestone, a little bit about golf. We'll see what happens. We're sneaking on in the year, and you're just down in Atlanta, if memory serves.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I know your season's a hair longer than mine, but you have to be thrilled. These last couple of days have almost felt like we have more than one season, which is not surface of sun.
It's been brutal. It's been brutally hot this summer. The only good thing is we've had a little bit of rain, so our courses are, you know, kind of feeds the ego a little bit off the tee. The courses are firm and fast, so you can poke it down there a little bit and feel like you got some distance. But it's, you know, we've got a little bit of rain, so the greens are really nice in our area. But boy, has it been hot. I'm ready for a little bit of fall golf to kind of move in here to Atlanta. And like you said, our season is pretty solid. I mean, we pretty much play golf year-round here in Atlanta. It may get a little too cold. But, I mean, it's really 30, 45 days in that December, January, and it's pick a week. I mean, here it could be 32 in the morning and, you know, 60 in the afternoon. So golf can be played pretty much year-round here, which is nice.
So I had this phenomenon every year because we actually get real seasons up here. There's lots of people north of us who are laughing at my commentary here because I know what it's like to actually have four full seasons. But you know, it's funny, man. We went through such a hot streak that I woke up the other day and was putting my kid on the bus and it was like 50 outside. And I started laughing. I'm like, dude, if this was January, I'd be so happy right now. But the fact that it's today, I'm like, it's cold.
It's cold. Yeah. I'm kind of a spoiled golfer as well. If it gets down below 50, I'm like, I've got plenty of days to play. So I've gotten a little soft. Being down, you know, I did some time in Tampa as an assistant pro, Panhandle, Florida, and then now I'm in Atlanta. So a little spoiled with the seasons, and so, you know, now we can pick and choose. If it's a little too cold or a little too hot, it'll be okay in a little bit.
I have this great debate with my guys who I play regularly with when it gets cooler out. We can never really decide whether it's shorts and like a quarter zip or hoodie weather or whether it's pants and a golf shirt weather. I prefer to lean on pants personally because no one needs to see how white my legs are. But, you know, they all seem to go pull over first of some kind. What's your take on that?
Well, definitely. I'll put shorts on if it's even close. I lean to shorts if it's close. And I'll put a little three-quarter zip. Or I still, in the classic, I like the little short sleeve jacket. You know, the classic, like mid-2000s when I had like 10 of them in my closet when they were so popular. Right. I like the little short sleeve jacket, and then you can shed it, you know, and do that. But you can't take pants off. You're kind of stuck with them if it gets too hot.
That's the best part.
unless you have the cool mid 2000s ones that zip and open up and you can take the sleeve off. You remember those? Are you old enough for those?
I am old enough for those. I'm old enough for tearaways. There's all kinds of nonsense we've lived through. But you know, it's funny, man. Like, you get so comfortable with something and then, like, suddenly it's a different season. Suddenly your swing changes. Suddenly your apparel changes. And man, there's one constant. We can actually tie this into your product a little bit because we've had different conversations on the forum recently about golf balls and changing season over season. I just debated with my dad who bought a whole bunch of V6s. I'm saying, man, like, they're not a bad ball. You know, as much as you want that tour level performance, you got to pay for it. So if you don't want that, you're willing to make some small concessions. I mean, you put that ball in play, but then you go in the communities like THP and you say, what golf ball do you play? It's always that tour series. But then you have this like small pocket of people who are just so invested in two things. Mm-hmm. Number one, a lot of them say, this is my ball year round. And number two, there are people who say, these are the balls I use religiously in the winter months when it's a little bit cooler out. And I either don't have a lot of faith in my game or I need a little bit of that extra compression, What's Bridgestone's take on all that?
Well, I mean, as the number one ball fitter in golf, we truly believe that you should play what fits your style of game. And that often happens. Let's equate this to clubs, right? I mean, if you're going to play windy conditions in, let's say, England or something, you may pull out the two iron and flight something down off the tee versus your hybrid. So it happens across the board. I mean, you can play in some turfs that are a little bit firmer and you need a little less bounce, you know, kind of be able to slide into it versus a lot of bounce on soft conditions that will help you not get the ball fat. So there's times where you change up your equipment, you know, even in the bag, and the golf ball is the thing that you use on every single shot. So I've always argued that it is the most important to have optimized for you. And so a lot of people do, you know, a lot of people don't get the opportunity to keep their game up year round at a steady, consistent basis. You know, they play sporadically or they play in scrambles and stuff like that. So they may need a more forgiving golf ball, let's say in the winter months when they're not playing as much or when it's cold. Maybe they don't like the sensation of a firmer golf ball off your club. There's the feel aspect from that as well. But I mean, what we say is play the right ball that fits you. So if your game requires something different in the winter months, I'm not going to sit here and argue with you and say, oh, that's ludicrous, you shouldn't do that, because to each his own. But you know, just don't, I think I've said it to you last time, just don't play a bunch of balls throughout a round. You know, you wouldn't change drivers on different holes, and you wouldn't randomly grab your buddy's driver out of his bag if you're playing a real game of golf, like a dogfight or money's on the line, you know, because you don't know what that driver does. So, you know, keep a consistent golf ball amount in your bag to where you can play the same golf ball throughout the, especially through a round and especially through a season. It makes sense to kind of stick with something that fits your game and you're very adept to.
Let me ask you a follow-up to that, because we just had a really weird question asked on the forum. I don't know why it always has to be a monetary thing, but it is. Someone goes, would you get paid, if someone offered to pay you $20,000 to play the lowest value ball in any company's lineup, so we'll assume Bridgestone in this case, for an entire year, would you do it? And the responses have been really fascinating, man. It's it's like a really big mix between I'm very much in love with my tournament play and wouldn't mess with that, too.
Right.
Yeah, that's more than enough for me. what do you think of that take?
Yeah, it's a take. I guess it would truly depend on how much that 20K means to you. You know, if you're looking to buy a new car or your son a car, 20K could be a lot. But and it definitely depends on the level of play that you are at. I mean, a lot of people that are, you know, kind of down in single digits and around that, they truly do desire the spin and control of a urethane tour level golf ball. But a lot of beginners and kind of higher handicaps need different things that a ball can deliver. Again, I hate to keep equating it to clubs, right? But it's like a driver. I mean, you have all these drivers out there in the market that have a super high MOI. That means they don't have, you know, taken away spin for better players. They might not be, you know, some of the tour level ones that are smaller may not have as much forgiveness across the face, but are able to kind of work the ball for better players. Then you go on the other end of the spectrum and you got drivers with a little bit of offset, a little bit more loft, a larger forgiving face, but maybe you can't shape the ball as much. They're really designed to hit the ball a lot straighter. Golf balls are exactly the same way. There's a line of golf balls that has a lot of spin. I mean, you look over my shoulder here on this side, you have the XS, which is a really spinny golf ball, and that's the golf ball that I love. I love the spin around the greens. You know, I think I play enough consistently to where I can track that ball off the tee. Now, is it the straightest ball for me off the tee? Probably not, but I do put a lot of emphasis on my greenside performance, shaping my irons, and then driver distance is good, and I can hit it straight enough. Now, as you go all the way to the right there with my shoulder, there's the RX, which is a more forgiving golf ball. You know, it's got a urethane cover, still has spin and control around the greens, but its performance off the tee is vastly different than the XS. It's very low spin. It's designed to just kind of go straight, almost trying to knock off spin for the everyday consumer. And our ball fitting shows that the everyday consumer still has a lot of spin on their driver. They cut the ball, they maybe hit down on it. They don't really get the right attack angle. They don't play enough. They haven't maybe learned all those things. So the RX is a really low compression golf ball that kind of designed to do that. And then as you go to the other side of me over here, we have E-Series golf balls that are definitely designed more for distance and straight flight. And, you know, we look at data, we look at ball fitting data, we look at golf data tech. We try to understand what the consumer wants. We also try to understand what the consumer actually shows in ball fitting. So we have these two databases of survey data where a consumer says, I want distance. And it is the number one answer to question off the tee or for a golf ball. It isn't greenside spin. It isn't shaping the ball. It isn't flagging the ball. Every year that we've done that survey, it is always distance. And number two is straight. So that is the number one thing people need from their golf ball. And then it ladders down, of course, to spin around the greens and all that kind of stuff. So we take those two, and that's how we develop our lines of golf balls, is we look at raw data from ball fitting, robot data from R&D, and then we also look at what the consumer actually desires and wants their ball to do, and we come up with these different lines. So going all the way back to your question of 20K, if you're willing to kind of sacrifice some of those things around the greens, and let's say in our instance, that would mean playing the precept laddie, you know, or, you know, the precept power drive or something like that. That's probably one of our balls that is definitely not a lot of greenside spin, but is a straight golf ball that flies. You know, if you're playing tournament stuff, if you're playing club championship, if you're playing Georgia Open qualifiers or stuff like that, I would highly recommend maybe not doing that. But if you need that 20K, then more power to you.
It's always funny until the 20K is sitting on a table looking at you with a stack of six dozen laddies. You know, I actually, when they first asked the question, my mind immediately went to Bridgestone, and I kind of thought that the laddie was the one. But I was also thinking about how I could probably get away with playing the E6 all year. I just feel like it's not like crazy far off in my perspective from the RX, which I love, but obviously you have some reduction in the performance. I want to go back to the E-Series a little bit, because you had talked about people saying, well, I need distance. And but my perspective is, when I hear that, the reasons for it rarely are pure isolations on spin. I mean, there's a lot going on there for people to need distance. Mm-hmm. But I want to give you an opportunity to share more about the E-Series, because there are a couple balls in that lineup. So I think a lot of people know the E6 because it's been around for a while, but I think you've got the E12. What else is going on?
Yeah, we have an E12, an E9, and an E6 inside of this line. So 6, 9, 12. And the 12 kind of is our like a hierarchy. It is designed with the contact force dimple. So it's designed to be the straightest golf ball on the line. So it kind of gives you the best of everything. It has more distance off the tee, but it creates more contact on the face. So it flies straighter. It doesn't slide around on your club face. And so it's a three-piece ball, you know, good performance with irons. Yes, it is a Sirlin product, so you're not going to get the performance like you would get around the greens with the Tour B line, but it does still give you great performance off of irons. It launches really high off irons, so you'll have a really steep descending angle on iron shots. It's not going to come in like really hot and bounce off the green. So E12 is probably the best golf ball. And then as you ladder down to the E9, it's really kind of all about distance for that golf ball. Extreme ball speed. We co-designed that with the WLD, the World Long Drive Association, and these guys helped build this golf ball, and they use that ball in competition. And then E6 is a lineage product that everybody knows and everybody's known for many years. It is a very soft-feeling golf ball, lowest compression inside of the E-Series line there, and it's really designed for the feel around the greens and easy distance off the tee. Some of the forgiveness you get with that E12 product goes into that E6. And so it's a two-piece golf ball for kind of a little bit more distance. And somebody who doesn't like maybe the firmer feel of the E9, the E6 is going to be for them.
Are you seeing any potential to shift that lineup, or are you really satisfied with where it is right now?
That's a great question, Dan.
Oh, thank you.
So just to Yeah, I'm trying to find the best way to kind of answer that question. We're really excited about where E-Series is going to go next year.
Okay.
That's all I could say right now. We just, when we were kind of starting this in the waiting room before, I just talked about we just had our national sales meeting a few weeks ago at Bridgestone Golf, and this was a product we discussed heavily. And so stay tuned. Definitely you guys will be one of the few that get a really, really early look at prototypes for this series, whatever it may be. If it stays the same, maybe a little different, but we're going to definitely connect with you guys in the forum and do some prototype testing and let you guys see it, like a super early look, but not quite yet, not ready to blow the lid on what's coming down the line. Elliot Mello, he might come running here and, you know, pull the plug on this interview if I start relaying some of those details.
It'd be funny to watch, though. We'd at least get the first part of it before the power goes off.
Just the computer starts shaking. I get pulled away.
Yeah, at least you can't pull your hair, right? Again.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm excited to see that because E-Series has evolved a lot. I remember 5, 6, 7, and you know that there's been some changes that I think make perfect sense for those who are trying to find a ball that suits them. And now, I tend to lean on the E6 for suggestions. Most of the people I talk to deal with spin issues, and I think that's one of the ones that'll really support them, and they prefer the softer feel of it. So, you know, I feel like that's always a nice benchmark, which is great. Let's talk about Tour B, because, you know, I've been kind of going down memory lane lately, whether intentional or not, on Facebook, like that time hop nonsense that comes up and shows the stupid stuff you said 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So fortunately, one of the ones wasn't a piece of commentary for me, but it was actually a picture of me at True Blue decked out in Bridgestone gear, hitting on the range there for a Morgan Cup way back in the day.
That was probably before me.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite memories. I think I had the J40s in the bag, probably the combo DPCs and CBs. Mm-hmm. Absolutely disgusting setup there. But it made me think about the progression of the ball lineup, because back then, I think Bridgestone was in many ways ahead of the curve. They had four balls in their tour lineup that supported very different golf swings. And I became a champion of that conversation for a long time. My perspective is that other companies acknowledge that and, you know, for lack of a better word, found ways to resolve it on their own side. But
I'd agree with that.
You know, it definitely felt like it was the starting point to an understanding that tour balls don't have only tour profiles on them.
That's right.
Even though I suppose you could make a really solid argument for the RX series that LPGA, it's very suitable for some of their players, or even senior tour, which seemed Freddie make a shift. So anyways, it's like 10 years. And that was back when Bridgestone was on the ball, not just a B. And I remember getting really cranky when you guys shifted that and then realizing it wasn't so bad. So, you know, long story short, that's, you know, 10 years of progression on a ball lineup that maintains the pillars of what it is, which I think is really important. So I guess the question from a company side is, how has Tour B evolved in either a positive or negative way? How has the company seen that last 10 years of progression?
Well, you know, they say imitation is the greatest form of flattery. And back then we did have four tour balls, and a lot of companies only had two inside of their tour line. You know, they kind of represented the spin and then one that would maybe take a little spin off for the tour players that would overspin in a wedge shot. And that was kind of really, that was their only approach to doing that, is like taking wedge spin off. And I feel like with ball fitting, we were one of the few that pioneered looking at spin through the bag, you know, like driver spin, just, it was what it was, even as early as early 2000s, you know, people didn't know what their driver spin was. They didn't know that it needed to be under 2,500. I mean, there's a lot of people that still don't really know those numbers for sure. But, you know, now, like you said, I would agree that a lot of companies have found their own ways to bring in more tour balls that kind of actually service the tour player at the elite level, which we know is only 0.5% of the golfing population. Maybe 1% of the population is a tour level player. But we know your buddy down the road who plays golf with you and shoots 85 could swing it as hard as a tour player. He just might not know where it's going. But a lot of players have tour level conditions that match up with a golf ball. And that's really where our line comes in. And we drew the line in the sand many, many years ago with our R&D engineers that 105 was kind of where was the tipping point of a firm golf ball to where if you swung under 105, you could really benefit from a lighter compression golf ball with tour level features. And when we launched, when Dan Murphy here at Bridgestone Golf launched the RX, that was, no one had a ball like that. It truly was one of those jumps from, you know, when we went from wound to solid core, when guys went from Serlin to urethane and Bellotta went away. That was definitely, no one had a soft compression golf ball that also had urethane and multi-layered tour capabilities. So we were kind of ahead of the game there. And for many years, we kind of had that where no one else really replicated that. That was due to a lot of patents and a lot of trademarking. But then, you know, everyone's kind of, you know, I might get in trouble for saying this, everyone's kind of brought their own RX version to the market eventually, whether it's, you know, SR3 with Callaway. Remember the SR series where they had the swing speed story, you know, a few years after us, the SR1, SR2, and SR3, and others, you know, Titleist has an AVX. So the soft compression tour ball market has grown definitely since we launched that RX product. But back to your original question of the evolution of Tour B, I mean, it's crazy to think of how different these golf balls are made from the first year that we had the kind of the full line. Like, for example, like now, Tour B X, which kind of was the B330, you know, heritage down the line, has more greenside spin and is softer than the first B330S that we came out with, which was the spinnier golf ball. So over those years, drivers have evolved, which we get a lot of data, driver data from ball fitting, irons, all these things have evolved, and our golf balls kind of follow that. And we keep a close eye on not just robot data all the time, but what is the consumer experiencing with the golf ball on a daily basis? What is the tour level player experiencing with the golf ball? So that's kind of an example of, you know, our, which was our firmest golf ball in the B330. Now is the Tour VX. Our Tour VX now is softer and has more spin around the greens than the B330S when we launched it back in 2007, I believe, or 2006, maybe a little sooner. But, they have evolved, each and every one of them. We tweak RX and RXS so much over the years. We don't try to do large tweaks because we don't want someone moving from year to year to experience some large difference with the golf ball. We're trying to tweak the golf ball to better benefit them. So someone who expects lower spin off the tee with RX isn't all of a sudden going to go into a different year of the RX, and we've firmed it up and we made it spin a little more off the tee. We keep the characteristics of the golf ball inside of its category for what the consumer expects. And we'll tweak things like, you know, the reactive IQ cover was one that made all the golf balls perform better around the greens based on the new material that we mixed in with the urethane cover. So things like that are how we evolve it year after year and make the product better.
But tell me how careful you are when you have a product that has staying power like that, that people have loved for the last decade. How cautious are you to make significant changes?
Yeah, you have to be. You have to be careful that you don't let R&D kind of run wild and make a specification on a golf ball outside of what the consumer expects. So, there's years where we'll test balls in ball fitting, prototyping, all that. And we could see where, hey, we really could have this year tweaked this and made this ball. Because what we're trying to do is we don't want to make all of them. Like, let's say this is the spectrum. There's this wide spectrum of performance between X, XS, RX, and RXS. We don't want them kind of stacked on top of each other. Like, that would... that'd be like making three drivers that almost perform identically. You want to move it out a little bit to where there is space between these, to where players can try different things and move from one ball to the other. You know, they could, you know, if you, let's say you swing right at 105 and you really benefit from kind of using all of them. You know, you, if you're a low spin player, then yeah, if you're 105, then you can kind of move to the XS and kind of launch it up a little higher and get the spin or the XS. But if you're on that line and you do the opposite and you're very spinny, cut the ball too much, borderline slice it, then the RX would kind of be up your alley. So the idea is to keep the integrity of each of the golf ball specifications that the ball represents. I always say it like this, like most every golf ball in our line has a gold medal in something, you know, like the XS has like a ton of greenside spin. That's the gold medal of XS. Like, don't ever take that away. Don't make it not spinny. The RX is like a very low spinning bullet off the tee. You know, that's the gold medal. So like there's things that we look at the ball that kind of is, well, this ball kind of must still do this inside of this, inside of the specification. And when we get those new specs from R&D, you know, there'll be 4 to 5 different prototypes that come in for RX. And, you know, first we look at the specs and on paper, you know, this one looks a little too firm on the mantle layer. I don't know. But then the testing is really where everything is revealed. You know, the ball could test totally different than what you would expect on paper, just because the real world, the cake looks like that on the box. But then when you put in the oven, mix everything, it comes out a different way. So same thing with golf ball. Like on paper, things look all cool in simulation, but real world testing and robot testing is where you really, the rubber meets the road.
You know, the nice part is we've done this testing, especially with a mid iron, and we're absolutely blown away at the difference between the four balls. I sort of expected it and felt very validated with all the nonsense I've spewed in positive ways toward Bridgestone to all my buddies throughout the year. So it's pretty cool. I want a little bit of an under the hood story here. Four balls in the lineup, and it's been four balls for a very long time. How many times did someone come in and say, hey, I've got an idea, let's drop one, or hey, I've got an idea, let's add a fifth?
That's a good question, because we've had both sides of the spectrum for many years here. And when it comes time to prototype Tour B and we start thinking about that, those are the considerations we have inside of the golf ball line. We thought about model consolidation. We've thought about model expansion. Like, all those things come up all the time. And we all, what's weird and great is we all have different comments on what direction to go. So we're not living in a dictatorship to where we all have to think the same thing here. You know, me and Mello may think one thing, you know, Ken Fujimori and some of our R&D guys and may think another. Dan Murphy may think another way. Our R&D guys may want to do something different. Our product control guys may want to consolidate people who have to deal with a lot of SKUs. So there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and we always talk through these things. And, you know, the thing about the four is there's just such a historic equity in having those four. And we've talked so much about those four. We've talked so much about the packaging color. Every consumer in the golf space, I feel like, is pretty soundly advised on our golf balls and kind of what they deliver. So there's always a fear or two of market confusion that we have to take into consideration as well. So there's a lot of factors. And I would say, to answer your question, we're always on both sides. You know, we somehow find ourselves at the keeping the four, and that's nice and it's safe and it's customary. But we always have conversations of less and like a super ball. Can we kind of smush the sides together and make one that's like the holy grail golf ball? And then, you know, then we have conversations about adding one more that's like super spinny or super low spin. That's like, really, that's the gold star that it does. But there's things we can do, could do, and things that are almost, I mean, when in the grand scheme of things, if you make a ball too niche, it's only for so small amount of people that you're not really going to sell a bunch of them. So like, you know, there's the balance of that as well.
I've got it. So fifth ball, five points to a star. It's Tour B. It's Tour B star. You get the point on the marketing thing. It said all things come together.
Yes. The complete ball. We've talked about that too, for sure.
Awesome. Tell me a little bit more about the comprehension in the marketplace, because I know you guys do a lot of fittings, and I know there's a lot of engagement there. again, I'm curious about the history of the product and where you feel like consumers are in terms of the overall lineup. I mean, it would make sense to me, being how accessible they are to so many people, that these would fly off the shelves and everyone would want to have them because it suits their game a little bit better than other balls they might be using because whatever Tour Pro uses them.
Sure.
What's the company take on that and the progression of that over the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, we've been pretty steadfast in the fact that, hey, we make golf balls for tour players over here in the blue and black box. And then we also make tour balls for the everyday player, not push down what the tour guys use to everyday players. Now, like I said, there's a percentage of people that will benefit from the Ball Tiger Blaze or the XS with the more spin. Like, but there's a large majority of people that would benefit from a specification that works better for them and delivers tour performance. So we've always been, hey, we're testing our tour players, but we put as much, if not more, stock into everything else. And we focus on the everyday golfer, the amateur golfer. We do way more testing. I'm sure other companies could not say this, but we do way more consumer and amateur testing than professional golf testing. And that is one thing that we're proud of. I mean, we spend time with our guys. We go see Jason and Tiger and Fred and all those guys when it comes time for prototype testing. But we basically triple that efforts with amateurs, you know, and bringing them out here to Covington for R&D testing, you know, going on site to other golf courses and doing amateur testing. Like, that's what is probably most important to us, is to get the rest of the line right for the everyday golfer, for the everyday consumer. So that's been our stance, and that's kind of what will always be our stance. If anybody comes in here saying the opposite, they're going to get run out on a rail here at Bridgestone. That's never going to work. But that's kind of where we fall as far as testing. The priority is always going to lie with the consumer and the everyday player.
So tell me more about the fitting process. Are you guys like, you know, it's not new to you. You've done fittings mm-hmm. for a long time. I remember hanging out with Mellow Man on the internet
yep.
you know, way back yep. in the day, doing an online ball fitting. Where are you guys at with ball fitting, and is there any new concepts in place?
Yeah, I mean, actually this year we had a effort to get back out into the field more than we have probably in the last 8-9 years. Obviously, when we went through COVID and all that, you know, all this in-person stuff slowed to a halt. And we were, you know, we were trying to be careful. Even golf courses were booming and people were getting back out there, but it was still on a basis of getting out there by yourself or a family member and, you know, not going through the shop and stuff of that nature. So we did a lot of virtual fittings kind of during the pandemic, right after COVID and all that. And we really tried to get out there. And we even had Auto, which you guys covered, which is an autonomous fitting robot. We'd roll that baby out there, no person, no human interaction, and somebody could go through a fitting kind of on their own. It was, I always said it was kind of like the self-checkout at Kroger. Like, you know, you could check out your food and you could run your credit card and you could do it. Now, there's some people that still want to go through the line and talk to a person and tell them about the coupons and all that stuff. But that's live ball fitting. So this year, we did make a larger effort. We brought in somebody that could focus more on ball fitting. And we launched a nationwide ball fitting program again. So we had about 12 ball fitters out this year. Now we're kind of moving into off season to where Sunbelt's going to be popular and doing fittings. But we're going to be running ball fitting year round now. And we've been at it for 8 months now, since right after the PGA show. And then when we get into 2025, we're really going to hit it hard from a marketing perspective, you know, telling people to go get fit, getting back out there. But we really needed that one season under our belt again to kind of get it, you know, get the truck running again. You know, the truck been sitting out in the yard. You know, we needed to put some fuel in it and get it running, and it was spitting and sputtering. But now we got this thing running like a well-oiled machine, and we're back to doing a ton of ball fittings. And we're really excited about that. And obviously our field guys are excited, our sales reps, that we're having ball fitting in a more consistent click. And then our Greengrass accounts are just elated that we're back out there doing ball fitting at a higher rate than we were before. So we're super excited about that. And then, and thirdly, the R&D team, you know, all the data we get from ball fittings, it's just a ridiculousness of riches of what they can analyze and go through and see. You know, we can segment it so much based on handicap, based on age, based on gender. We segment it based on launch conditions, high spin player, low spin player. I mean, there's so many pivot tables. When I was at R&D, you know, I'd have a whole tab that was full of nothing but pivot tables and different ways that we could segment this data and just kind of take a look at it. So we're hitting up R&D now all the time from marketing perspective, from a product development perspective, specification wise. And we're just diving into that data once again. And so to answer your question, ball fitting's kind of on its full bore right now with Bridgestone. We're excited to be back out there doing the live fittings at a high click rate. And, you know, we're going to pump it even more coming right after the PGA show in 2025.
Well, tell me why that matters so much. And let me secondary to that. How much of this is about making sure they're fitting the right ball for you and giving them a chance to compare you to competitor balls? Because everyone has the ball they think is the ball, right? Yep. And whether they're being foolish or not is sort of up to the launch monitor to say. Mm-hmm. But, you know, where do you guys stand on that process?
So we do live competitive fitting. We do it a little differently than our competitors. A lot of our competitors will have just their tour balls out there, just those couple, and that'll kind of be all you'll get to hit. What we do is we lay out everyone on the table. We'll have everything from Titleist, TaylorMade, Callaway, on down to Vice, and everything under the sun that we can get our hands on, Volvic, Wilson, yada, yada. And what we do is we let you hit the ball that you're playing and get a baseline. So sometimes somebody will have something that's not on the table, like some dude will walk up and have, you know, Pro V1 left dot, you know, and so we'll have them hit some shots with that and we'll kind of take a look at it. And what we found, very consistent with pre COVID time, we found that 7 out of 10 golfers still don't have optimized numbers for their driver. And we know that driver sets up the golf ball, and we do still do ball fittings by driver. It is the number one answered thing that consumers want from their golf ball is distance. We do have, as you see over my shoulder, we have a long line of golf balls that do different things around the greens. Greenside performance and approach shot is considered as well inside the fitting. It's just not a long drive contest. It never has been with Bridgestone. And seeing that data and comparing those two and giving them a Bridgestone recommendation is key. And like I just said, 7 out of 10 come to us and they're playing their own golf ball, which means that every 10 people that walks up to us, 3 of them are kind of optimizing what they're playing. So somebody may come up and they may be playing a, you know, Pro V1 left dash and it works for them. Now we're going to give them Tour BX and say, hey, here's the ball I recommend. But you were hitting your golf ball pretty good. It looks like the distances are pretty similar, or you hit yours a little bit longer. But here's what we'd recommend inside of our line. But that only happens about 30% of the time. The other 70, we're showing them that, hey, whatever you grabbed off the shelf because you didn't really know what you were grabbing is way too spinny for you. You know, we're seeing driver spin at like 3,500, 3,700. With this RX, we saw that we could get that spin down to like 2,800, 2,900. Get you back under 3,000. And, you know, we saw about 8 yards of distance gain for you when we knocked those spin numbers down, something like that. And that's what we typically see with a ball fitting is somebody got some balls from Aunt Becky or grandma, or they took them out of their dad's bag and they have no idea what it's doing. So the odds of that ball, like miraculously matching up with their swing is already pretty low. So what we like to do is educate the consumer on why this spec works for you, why the RX works for you, why the XS with more spin works for you, why the E12 works better for your swing speed in your game, and then leave them with some confidence in a golf ball that fits them.
Yeah, I like the idea of not being afraid to compete. We hear a lot of this discussion out there, like, you know, there's always a joke about the one company who does the one thing and puts the robot at 125 mile an hour, and suddenly it's the best of, you know, this category, and it's so unrelatable. But when you put it down and you get to hit, I think it's like anyone who goes to a golf store and grabs three irons off the shelf. I mean, that's just pure. It's just pure them hitting the ball and experience it for themselves. So the willingness to go all in on something where you're willing to go up against someone else is, I think, a really great thing. And in the end, we all benefit from it, right? Because we know we're playing the best ball.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers don't lie. I mean, we have you hit three shots with your current ball that you're happy with. We have you hit three shots with our ball that you're happy with. And then we compare the two, and sometimes we win, a lot of times we win, and then sometimes we don't. And that's just kind of the way we have this conversation with our fitters when we train them here and bring them into Covington to teach them about ball fitting. We're like, mathematically, you can't win them all. Like, it's impossible to think that we're going to beat every golf ball. So, like, you know, if you lose one, your first guy walks up at the beginning of the day and he hits his golf ball that he's currently playing, and you know, he's kind of done his homework and he's went in the forums and he's kind of figured it out, then that happens sometimes. And there might be a spec that works for him. But at the end of the day, you know, when you do 20 fittings, you know that 14, 15 of them is going to be in our favor, because a lot of golfers just go up the shelf and they grab a ball on the way out of Dick's or at their pro shop because, hey, this is the ball the pro behind the counter plays. You know, I saw him playing the other day. But they really have no idea if it does fit them or not. So that's why live ball fitting is so important. You know, for us too, it's a boots on the ground initiative. You know, we understand that we got to get out there and put people in green grass facilities that do these fittings and see courses and get out there and physically, tangibly touch golfers with the right golf ball.
Yeah. Tell me a bit about tour activity. How are things going out there?
Well, I tell you, it's turning out to be somewhat of a busy off season for us. We're kind of coming down to the end of the tour year, and we like our team. We're not really, I wouldn't say we're heavy shoppers right now, but we've had a lot of activity and a lot of players reach out to us and want to test the ball and kind of, you know, do some testing in the off season. So I can't sit here and say we're going to sign a bunch of people, but there could be some folks that are kind of moved to the Bridgestone side that might surprise some folks. But yeah, it's exciting. Me and a couple of the R&D guys are going to get out this fall and see some of these players and try to get to know them and let them know about the Bridgestone brand and what it's done for guys like Tiger over his career and Jason Day kind of getting back into the winner's circle after, you know, changing over to the Bridgestone ball. So we've had some success with players and kind of bringing them back and, you know, a lot of wins. So, we're gonna kind of hit the road this fall and talk to some new folks.
Tiger logo optional.
Sure, yeah. We'll give it. You know what, Dan? If it sign you, we'll put the Bridgestone Golf back on there just for you.
Oh yeah, there we go. Yeah, just send the contract, man. I'm in.
I'll just write. I'll get on them and write it out to the side of the big B. Bridgestone Golf.
Oh man, is there a ball that's most popular on each tour, do you think?
Yeah, the X right now. Used to, we had a lot of players play the XS. It was a really spinny golf ball, but the X has really become, in the last year and a half, because of its balancedness. It has really good spin around the greens. It does not spin as much as XS. We know that. XS is the spinnier golf ball around the greens. But it is such a balanced golf ball. And even, like, you know, obviously Tiger played the XS a year and a half ago. Jason Day started out with us with the XS. Kuchar was in the XS. But a lot of these guys have gravitated over to the X because of the things I a little bit described earlier of how we've softened the cover up on the X to make it spin a little more around the greens. So right now, the X is definitely our most popular golf ball on tour, and it is becoming one of our most popular golf balls, definitely on that side of the 105 inside of Greengrass accounts and retail. RX is still our number one horse. RX is still the best golf ball for most average everyday, you know, weekend players and guys who have jobs that have a 401k and have
you
to
just
buy
point
golf
at
balls.
Me if you want, man. It's fine. Holy, I yeah, get it.
Yeah. But the RX is still kind of leader in the clubhouse as far as the best fit for most golfers who are purchasing golf balls that aren't getting free ones.
So when you said best fit, also most purchase, is it most common?
Yes.
Okay. What about E-Series? What's most sold E-Series?
E12. Okay. RX and E12 are kind of head to head as far as largest sales inside of our line.
Okay. Interesting. Huh. I bet that fancy new fifth tour ball, the Star, would probably sell more than all of them. You never know.
Possibly.
That's so generous, possibly, he says.
We'll have that conversation in this room probably again, like we do every 18 months.
That's so funny. I have another question in it as it relates to, I guess it touches on mindset, but I think you guys had always had a pretty firm stance on blinging out your golf ball. I don't really have a good way of putting it. Things on it that may or may not help the performance of the ball. Obviously,
decorating.
Obviously, mindset has a very distinct purpose, and it sounds like you've had some good success with that. Does that change the perspective at all, being that there does seem to be a fairly notable trend in golf where decorating the golf ball is becoming a thing?
I don't think it changes our stance. I think we still, like, if we were going to bring something to the golf ball printed on it, it needed to have meaning for us, whether it's Bridgestone marketing or R&D or something like that. I mean, we obviously still logo golf balls and we'll have drops to where they have logos on it, stuff like that. But as far as a printed, advertised, marketed thing, you know, we want to make sure that whatever comes on the golf ball has a purpose. And so mindset this year has been pretty phenomenal. The tour acceptance of it has been great. We've talked a lot about, I won't beat your listeners over the head again with what mindset does. I think we did that ad nauseum our first time when we talked about mindset. So I won't go through the steps and all that.
Go listen to that one if you haven't. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
But Jason Day's performance coach, Jason Goldsmith, has been really great over the last, you know, probably 10 months since this ball's launched, of talking to us, talking to our TSMs, which are our sales reps, and kind of talking about what the guys do on tour that is so directly linked to what mindset is. You know, a lot of players on tour are doing this. They're going through these processes of identifying, visualizing, and then focusing. And it's like a repeated step when they're over the ball. And one of the things he said is he feels like a lot of everyday golfers don't do this, you know, because we've got jobs. We work 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week, and we may not even play every week. So we may get out there and, you know, I'm thinking about my son's grades and, you know, he's calling me for Fortnite V-Bucks and, you know, like there's all this stuff going on in my head when I'm on the golf course and I'm trying to win $20 from the dogfight. Like it's my last $20 that I have and I can't focus over the ball. So what mindset's been able to do, and I've count me somewhat skeptical when we first were talking about this in R&D, I was kind of like, I don't know, guys, something on the ball like this. I don't know if really good players are going to accept this. Like, yeah, maybe like a middle handicap, like could want this, but like better players, I don't know. And I'll tell you, the biggest people that have latched on to mindset has been lower handicaps and mid handicaps and guys that want to get better and realize that, like, hey, it's kind of like me. I probably play, if really lucky, once a week, majority of the time, once every 2 weeks. But when I play that once a week or one every 2 weeks, I'm like you did. I want to play well. I don't want to get out there and hack it around and just like, I'm okay with. I want to hit good shots and I want to drive the ball well. And I might have unrealistic expectations about the way I'm going to play, but I'm going to have them and I'm going to try to do it. So like for me, I have used it so much on the ball and I put it on the very back and I use the green dot as like my contact point. Like if I'm going to cut the ball and put it a little on the outside, if I'm going to draw it, I'm put it a little on the inside. And I've really used it a lot over the last, 18 months since we had prototyping of this ball. I started using it and it's really good. It's impactful. It's done amazingly well in the market. I mean, we had expectations of it doing a certain number and a certain percentage of Tour V sales, and everything so far has exceeded our expectations, and Mindset is definitely here to stay. We're going to kind of go into year two of it on Tour B with a secondary plan to kind of reinvigorate the story, talk about it a little more. A lot of tour players are wanting to kind of use it more on tour, so we're getting it a little more out there to players going into kind of year two. And yeah, we're excited about Mindset, and I know and some maybe tired of hearing about it on the pod, but it's really awesome and we're excited.
Now it's funny. I had this debate recently while on the golf course. One of the guys in my group, right before he goes to swing, says, "Can't wait to see where this one goes," and then swings. I'm like, dude, what do you guys think about before you hit the shot? And the feedback I've received since asking that has been pretty remarkable. Like, I always thought the last thing you should do is like, focus, talk yourself up, this will be good, and then you hit the ball.
Yep.
But then some of them are so self-deprecating, it's just like, God, man, you need something like a smiley face to look at right before you hit.
Yeah, I got two great examples of that. One is a tour player, and then second is a big amateur test that we did right when we launched Mindset. So first was we at our shoot in December, and we were going to launch this in a few months. We were talking to all of our players about it. Jason Day obviously uses it on tour. We got a little time to talk to Tiger about it, and he used your example almost identically, except it was a comment after the shot. And he said, "I've played in so many pro-ams to where a guy will hit a shot and it's in the air and it's slicing towards the water. Like never a chance it was going to hit any grass." And he says, "I knew I was going to do that." And Tiger's like, why would you have that in your mind? And he said, his dad taught him that, half the battle is visualizing the good shot and where the ball should go. If you don't have that, if you don't have the visualization of I'm going to start on the left side of the fairway and I'm going to cut it back to, he was kind of like, then what are you doing? You're just hitting it please just go forward. Like, how can you expect to have good results if you don't actually have a plan of what your golf ball is going to do, whether it's visualizing the shot or you see a pro tracer of what it's going to do? And then secondly, we ran a pretty robust mindset test. And what we wanted to do was see if players actually improved. And we found that it is not instantaneous. Like, it isn't like the very next round. You might see a little bit of it. But what we did is we had players play the ball that fit them for five rounds before, and then we had them play the same ball because we wanted all the data similar. We didn't want them playing Pro V1 before and then RX Mindset the second five rounds. So we had them play five rounds with the ball that fits them, say it's RX, and then we introduced Mindset to them for the second five rounds. And so we brought them all back in and explained Mindset, what it should do. Got them to basically sign that they would use Mindset for those five rounds. They would grind away. They would use it no matter what. They'd put it on the ball over shots. They would think of those three steps. And golfers nearly saved three shots per round when playing that. Their handicap improved by three shots if they just focused over the ball, identified the target, visualized their shot, and then focus on the green dot and execute. And so we found that golfers play well. And that number even got bigger when you got up to kind of mid to high handicap. So it got close to five shots per round for players that were 15 and above in handicap. So, again, my point is Mindset's been great. We've saw some analytical data that shows that it helps players. And then the feedback and testimonials from everybody has been great.
It's just so anecdotal, man. Am I a good person to use Mindset? Well, when was the last time you saw your buddy hit one OB and you're up next, you go, I don't want to hit after that. Yeah, I think you're a good fit.
Yeah, you know, Jason Goldsmith was just at our sales meeting, and he had such a great story about the possibility of success based on your attitude. And he said, if your attitude is flat, you're not up or down. That's the baseline, right? He said that if you have a negative attitude when you come to a basketball game, because he helps basketball players shoot free throws at a static position. It's so different, you know. And he helps pitchers go through their rotation and go through their pre-shot routine on the mound.
Can you get Alec Manoah on that, please? I need him to start pitching better. That'd be huge. Thank you.
And then golfers are the same way. And he said that he found that your possibility of success drops 25% if you have a negative attitude. If you're thinking, oh, crap, I'm going to miss this shot or I'm going to hit this OB. And he said, and then the opposite of that is you have a 25% greater opportunity if you're in a good headspace, a positive, almost like a cockiness. So, we know golf is cocky, right? Like, we've all hit really good shots when we say, watch me hit this. And because you're about to do it. And he said, think about that swing. You've went from negative to positive, a 50% chance of success in the swing of just having a positive attitude rather than a negative one. And he goes, if you don't think that's real, you know, look at these tour players. And when these guys are coming off of a great week or good play and in a good space, those are the guys that are always trending to win. It's always things feel like they're going the right way. So anyway, his point was like, that positive attitude and the opposite of what me and you just said of thinking like, oh, I'm about to blast this OB or man, that water, I'm about to, oh, this grass is leaning, I'm about to chunk this chip. You know, you basically talked yourself right into doing that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you, man. One thing we didn't get to talk about is how is the, you playing any family golf this summer?
Yeah. The wife's getting back into it again.
Yeah.
I mean, she's definitely a fair weather golfer, and she likes it to be a little bit cooler. So right now we went once or twice late afternoon Sundays, 9 holes. I know you said that your son was turning 9. Mine's about to turn 10 in a few weeks. And so he's on the snack and right around the cart train. He might get a couple shots here and there, but I mean, he just hasn't fully got into playing quite yet, but he likes to go out and play and have a good time at the golf course, but snacks are kind of more of a priority than hitting the golf ball right now with him.
Oh yeah. Snacks are a guarantee. I joke with my son, like I'm pretty sure half the reason why you want to go golfing is so you can eat a bunch of snacks while we're here.
Yeah. That's
pretty standard. The difference is that he's crazy invested and my fear, yeah, man, good. Is listen, uh-huh. It took me like 24, 25 years to realize that I wasn't going to go pro in golf and I didn't need to be that upset when things weren't going well. So I kind of feel like it's an Edwards trait, not entirely sure, but you know, he's kicking those tires a little bit right now. We're finding what makes him good and letting him celebrate that a little bit. So yeah, we've had a really fun year. It's been great.
My son is definitely more focused on becoming a YouTuber professional rather than a golf professional right now.
Well,
so.
Might be more money in it. You never know.
I know. Yeah, you're probably right.
All right, my man. Hey, thank you so much for joining today. It's always fun to talk Bridgestone golf balls.
Yeah, man.
A big part of my golf story. So, you know, seeing the success is very important to me. And give us a little tease for next year, which is awesome. And yeah, any final thoughts or questions for me before we wrap?
No, man, just thanks for having me on. And like I said, look forward to some fall ball proto testing with the forums and you guys and you and getting some feedback. And yeah, hope everybody has a great fall and play some golf and can't wait for 2025.
Awesome. Hey, you guys listening out there, I know you're all wizards of knowledge and are fit to the perfect products, but if you're not, check out the ball fittings from Bridgestone. It sounds like they're doing a lot of really good things right now. See what fits in your lineup. And I know the Pops is going to listen to this. I hope you're enjoying those E6s, but don't be afraid to splurge a little bit. Get some of those RXs in play. If you guys are playing golf this weekend, have fun. Make a count. Compliment someone on a good swing. Tell them... And if you are one of the ones that have to tee off after they hit it OB or in the water,
think positive.
It's not your fault. It's theirs. It has nothing to do with you. Okay. We'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.